But I'd like to take a little different tack with you and ask you a very simple question. Why do we publish in the first place? Anybody have any, not a rhetorical question, I need an answer from somebody. Anybody have a good answer?
Someone to read it.
Someone to read it. Okay, someone's waiting to read what you've written. I can't wait to read what you are. I can't read it, I'm sorry.
I'm going to live.
Live. Stop. Live wrote a nice paper, and I just can't wait to read it. I don't know, Liv. I see 1,000 papers a year. I'm not sure I'm going to wait for yours. But there might be a reason to look for his. Any other ideas out there? There's one. Share information. That's one part. But the second part is even more important. So they can build on it. So you can change their mind about a certain topic. Because when you write, you are considered the expert in this area. That's the message you want to get across. That you have addressed a question, you've got a problem you're trying to solve. You use a hypothesis to try to address that most logically. And you come up with a solution or an answer. Warren talked about telling a story. Well, what kind of stories do we like to read? Stories with a happy ending, right? Everybody in this room, I'm sure, can recite a nursery rhyme they learned as a child without a problem. I'm sure. Why? Because you know the structure. You know what it's about. There's a situation that is described. There's probably a person you're identifying with. In this case, a problem you're identifying with. There's a protagonist, an antagonist. They have a struggle, da da da. And in the end, everybody lives happily ever after, right? And it sounds strange, but believe it or not, the same kind of logic you can apply to writing a very persuasive research article. Why? We've got a problem with low nitrogen in the soils. We want to find a way to bring in bacteria to elevate nitrogen in the plants. How are we going to do that? Well, there's lots of ways you can do it. We're going to design experiments to improve the interaction between the soil microbes and the plants. Right? Here are the results we found because of the clever way we decided to do this. And we found that we can, in fact, solve that problem by doing it in the sea. It is an archaeological thing to put together. But you've got to think about telling a story that convinces others to do something. All right? Is it a concrete thing? Is it simple? Is the message coming across? Are you getting others to do something? Are you inciting some kind of reaction? That's really the best paper. Absolutely the best paper. Sure, you got to cross the T's and dot the I's. Everyone has to do that. But that's not what sells the paper. That's not what convinces the review panel or the reviewers to go, oh my goodness, publish this thing right away. Is it a credible story? Is it decent science? Is it going to motivate somebody to change their mind about what they know about this subject? Because ultimately, crop science serves the society because it gives you a venue to move our understanding forward. And that's what you have to do. That's really what we publish. And if you can do that and distinguish your approach from others in terms of being a really good approach, you'll get your papers published, no problem. Believe me. Because editorial boards are designed, and their structure is designed to look at the science of what you're trying to get across. Right? I can't tell you how many times I've heard, it's good data, it should be published. My answer is baloney. Nobody cares about your data. They all care about what message you're getting across and how you can convince them that these data are solving the problem, moving our understanding forward. That's what you have to work on. So those concrete messages in the conclusion, they are really important. A very good abstract that describes why you're doing this, what you got, what the conclusions are, that's what gets people started to read your paper. The abstract's got to be good, right? So those are the kind of things that's going to help you, that will help you publish and publish readily. I really enjoy reading papers that have this kind of thought put into presenting your ideas. And believe me, if I have to go through 1,000 a year, I really have to take out the papers and move through the system. That makes our whole editorial job a lot easier. Okay. Thank you.
Well, I'd like to thank the four editors definitely for excellent presentations. I think a lot of very valuable tips were mentioned, and everyone should be gaining a lot from this. Just before we go to the question period, two quick reminders. I did hand out some surveys right at the start, and they were passed around. I did leave some at the back. I do ask that you fill out the surveys and either leave them on your chair or leave them at the back door before you leave the session today. And the presentations will be put online on the Society's website after the conference, so you will be able to get at some of these PowerPoint slides and hear some of the things that were said. So on that note, we have about 30 minutes left formally in the session for questions. We like to leave this wide open and interactive, very comfortable, so I urge you to ask individual editors any questions you may have, ask or pose a question to the four editors, and likely one or two of them will take the lead. So on that note...
Can I make one other statement didn't get made, but I think it's important to say, especially for younger faculty and students, when a paper gets submitted, sometimes they are rejected. I get papers rejected even now. You cannot take that personally. It's just part of being a professional. You have to act professionally. All these people here have gotten letters from rejected authors that have been very patrolling, however you want to say. You know, that's not, they may have some good reasons, may have some bad reasons. I don't know. But I see some of my students in the past, when they get a review back, even if it's not a rejection, just a critical review, it's really crushing. It's like they rejected my baby. Well, it is your baby, but you got to treat that baby professionally.
Great.
Yeah, so, say for instance, I had a poster or a talk at a conference, and I wanted to publish, an expansive version of that in a journal. What is there a rule of thumb as to how different, how expansive it needs to be before it's considered publishing somewhere else?
Usually, if you're presenting a poster or a paper at a meeting, and only the abstract is published, you can go ahead and publish the full paper because it's so far the only thing officially publishes the abstract. On the other hand, if you go to a conference where they have a conference proceedings and you actually write a short paper for the proceedings, is that what you're thinking of? In that case, if you're writing a proceedings paper and then you want to write a paper for the journal, you do have to carefully consider, am I presenting additional information in the journal paper that's not in the conference paper? If they're almost identical, then that would be considered duplicate publication, and that would be not allowed. So you just have to see if sometimes a conference paper, they may be a page limit, maybe only 4 pages or something, and you really can't give the full methods or there's the rest of the study, and maybe when you write the full paper, there's a lot of additional information, and that would be fine. You just have to make sure that you're going beyond the conference paper. But if all you've got published is the abstract, then go ahead and write the full paper. That's not considered duplication.
About review, specifically in crop science, should we contact the editor before doing the review, or is it just up to the author to have the initiative?
So if I understand, you want to do a review, you want to be a reviewer? Yes, contact the editor and ask, let them know who you are, send your CV, and say, here's an area that I might be, want to provide services at the journal, and they're turning over every year. This year I have to find 15 new ones for the journal. So sure, if you're interested, doesn't mean you're getting asked to do it this year, because that list is always moving. But please do, if you have an interest in serving as a reviewer. Or even an associate editor. That's good too.
No, I'm sorry. I mean writing a review. A review paper.
Oh, forgive me, that's something else altogether. The question was about writing a review paper. The journals, most of the journals have different categories of papers. Basic research articles, scientific review articles, review interpretation articles. Those don't need to be solicited by the editor. You're very welcome to send an article in with an idea. You might contact the editor first. That would be fine, but it's not required. You can just submit it as a review, and it'll be approved as such. So, no problem. Yes.
Can I interject a follow-up question? Yeah, Warren mentioned to me is true. One thing, especially if there's a lot of students in here, it's a less traditional now than it might have been many years ago to write an exceedingly detailed literature review as part of your thesis. But nevertheless, you may have done an awful lot of work in reviewing that literature. It's probably worthwhile having a discussion maybe with your major professor, and that might be something to consider doing, is to use that as a review. Because I'll speak for Soils, but I know we just had a discussion with all the journals. We're looking for good review articles, and quite often at that stage of a PhD thesis where you pulled all that literature together, you're in an excellent position to write a review on a pretty specific topic. So
yeah, now bear in mind, a review article doesn't mean let's just summarize everything on an area. What we're really looking for is your opinion as an expert on where this area is going. What's looking for in the future. Again, to kind of incite people to respond and maybe take it up and become part of that movement, so to speak. The question is?
I just wanted to find out if you did meet one of the board, what are the generally the basic requirements for experience or?
What are the basic requirements for becoming a reviewer? I guess you've got to convince the associate editor that you are the right person to share your opinion about the science, the basic science in a paper. You can be a graduate student, you can be a postdoc, you can be someone that's got 30 years experience. There's really no hard, fast rule about it. You have to be a postdoc before we are calling you. That's not true. In fact, I've had some very, very well done reviews from students in my lab. I said, here's a paper that I know you know about, give me a review. And I looked at it. I said, well, that's as good as anything I've ever read, you know. So, sure, no problem, no problem at all. Now, how do you get on that list? If you are a member of the society, we have a database that all reviewers can access. So make sure you're in that database. And make sure you highlight the areas you think you are an expert. This is what you're being asked. At least you have a database. And when they say, I need somebody that knows something about photosynthesis, they're going to 10 names, and they'll pick a card. All right? And good luck with that. You should give it a try. I teach a class in crop physiology, and I make my students do reviews. For this very reason, they're just going to get asked to do it. Okay, sure.
So the other suggestion there is talk to your major professor, say, you know, I'd like to get some experience reviewing. They probably get contacted more frequently than they really like to review. And then they'll know that you're interested and pass it along.
But give you a shot. Why not? Wait a bit.
How about the same question for becoming an associate editor?
This will take some recognition by your peers. Publication record, particularly crop science, if you publish in a certain area, it's more likely to be considered, but that'll take some experience. Right? We generally try not to ask assistant professors because they're bogged down trying to get tenure. But you get tenure, and you're probably going to get up right away. Right? You can become a ministry, you can have a postdoc. There's all kinds of levels, but you need to publish. You need to be recognized by the community as someone who has gotten involved in publication. That would have a better job with it.
I'd like to add to that. As you're asked to do reviews, if you're very prompt and thorough in your reviews, you get asked to do more reviews, and over time, they'll say, well, you know, this reviewer is doing a good job, and we have an associate editor opening coming up, maybe I'll ask them to be an associate editor. So it's a whole process. You do papers, write papers, and over time, if you do a good job of both of those, you will get asked.
Now, by a good job, it means being constructive, being thorough, not being nitpicky, being timely, yeah, that's right, but considering the individual's career. In other words, your job is to help them present that science. Now, maybe your answer is, this isn't ready to go, but you can still do that in a constructive way. And believe me, the editorial board looks at the way you write those reviews. Okay. I want to make one more comment about that poster. If you present a poster at a meeting and you're thinking about patenting some aspect of that work, you get 1 year. And otherwise, after that time, it's considered public information, and you really can't get patents on it. Okay, one more question, right in the back, yeah.
Is there any support system for a person that's written a paper in English? Is that second language?
Yes, there are a number of, not within the society per se, but there are a number of professional organizations that basically pay for the service, that they will look at your paper and move it into an English-based language, so to speak. A number of authors use these. Do you have money on hand?
I know, but I get asked a lot to do that, and I will do a few. But you know, one of the things I tell some of my students are people that I get manuscripts from that English is not their first language. It's not the best tool, but it is a tool that helps take you quite a ways down the road. Microsoft Word, which everybody uses, has a grammar spell check. And if you take care of all the red underlines, which means you have a misspelled word, that takes care of most of your misspellings. You may still have the wrong word in there because it's spelled right, but it's the wrong word. But it'll go a long way to at least handle most of your misspellings. And if you handle most of the green underlines, which means you have a verb tense error or the sentence just doesn't make sense. If you just do those two simple things, it's amazing how much a manuscript becomes approved.
It's true. And I'll tell you that many reviewers are dismayed when they find typographical errors, words spelled incorrectly, because the software will take care of that for you. Hit a button and, you know, go through the paper. So that's a good thing to avoid. It's not a reason to release a paper by any means, but it certainly gives an edge to the reviewers, like, oh, gee, what else am I going to find? Okay.
Question at the front.
Both Sally and Warren talked about the size of fonts with the graphs and the line weight. Are there any suggestions? Because I know you have a certain size in Microsoft Word and then it'll be shrunk.
The suggestion I get is very easy. Go to a Xerox machine, a copy machine, I shouldn't say Xerox anymore, copy machine, and reduce it down to the size it's going to look in the journal, and then look at it and say, that font size is really hard to read. It's a real simple thing to do. So I'm not going to say use 12 point, 14 point, use Arial versus Helvetica, all that kind of stuff. Just take it, reduce it down to a column in a journal, and you know what that's going to be, 3.5 inches, I think, in our journals, and then just see what does it look like. The same thing for tables. Tables use the same.
The style guide does have suggestions for font size that work. And since most of you are probably doing these in graphics programs anyway, instead of just hitting the default, make it 3.5 by whatever size, and you're going to see it right on the screen in terms of whether you can read it or not.
Any other questions? Well, I definitely have one. Warren, just to build on what you said right at the very end, I personally just had a paper rejected within 10 days of submitting it, and I felt it was a very extremely unfair rejection. I feel I was rejected for the wrong reasons. I was provided no feedback. Is there any course of action, or is that something where you just suck it up and move on?
No, that's it. You're out. Have any of you gone through a whole career without a paper rejected? We don't reject papers, we release them.
Yep.
To answer the question specifically, I have an example. I'm not going to give the whole story, but I had a paper released. And I felt it was extremely unfair, and I went back and I said I didn't think this was the good reason. And it became, I don't know, for some reason, the editor, this was not one of our journals, got very personal and began to attack me. So I just did. I said, okay, that's it. I'm not going to fight it anymore. I went to another journal. But I think most journals, the review system is not perfect. So if you really have some good reasons why you think that it was not given a fair shake, I think most journals might give you a second chance to at least look at it. The majority of the time, it probably will come back negative again, but not always. About as good as I can say.
All right, well,
go ahead.
So a couple things along those lines. I'll reiterate. I think whenever feedback, whether it's a manuscript that looks like it's on its way to acceptance or its release, there are undoubtedly things you can learn from that review.